I'm Jennifer Moore for CFRU 93.3 FM, and I'm speaking with Doug Peebles, the treasurer of Local 232 of OPSU under the Ministry of Agriculture and Food. And just to open up, I know that a lot of listeners are probably familiar through listening to the media over the past little while with the fact that nurses and correctional workers are represented under OPSU. Who else is does OPSU represent?
OPSU represents, actually, there's six different bargaining categories. Mm-hmm. There's all different types of positions. For example, in our work locations, we have at One Stone Road there's communication officer, they call them information officers. There's industrial development officers. There's systems officers. Those are the people that keep the computers and the network running.
Sure.
There's your client account folks that help out or do the administrative part or the administration, like the finance and human resources stuff. A lot of the ministry used to have, a couple years ago, a lot of agricultural representatives. We don't have too many of those now. Now they're information officers and as well as industrial development officers. So they're focused on rural economic development is what a lot of them are the work is focused on now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, I guess, an example of some of the positions in our ministry. There's some. There's one or two economists, that type of thing, statisticians. I shouldn't forget, we do have 8 meat inspectors, the only 8 left in the province.
Really?
That are full-time, mm-hmm. That's another story unto itself. I could go in that direction, but I'll let you ask a question.
All right. Well, I wanted to start with, in what state does the public sector in Ontario find itself as it's going, like at the point that it was entering these negotiations? And I suppose what I'm asking is that when you were going in with requests to the bargaining table, were you actually looking to make headway to gain ground, or were you looking to regain perhaps lost ground that had been lost over the past few years?
I think almost all of the above, but the big focus is on learning the lessons of Walkerton and rebuilding the public services. Like with 6.5 years, 7 years of cutbacks, the public services is kind of in a crisis, and we need more environmental officers. Type of inspectors, and we mentioned the inspectors that we have in our ministry. A lot of the problem is the public has to ask themselves, what kind of workforce do you want inspecting your food, inspecting your water? The example I always draw on, because I'm most familiar with it, is take meat inspection, for example. Back in 96, 97, they laid off, we used to have 150 full-time inspectors, and now, as I mentioned, we're down to the 8. Well, they replaced them with a contract part-time workforce, and they're having trouble keeping people in those positions. They're always looking for something, so you've got an inexperienced, unstable workforce. And also, they've hired people back, and they're burning them out because they're working like retirees or working like 60 hours a week, and you're burning that workforce out. So the public has to ask themselves, a lot of what we do is transparent. It isn't until something goes wrong that you realize, oh, that was a public service.
Mm-hmm.
There are some of the things like the driver licenses, the marriage certificates, those types of things that are visible to the public, but it's the infrastructure of the province and that the stuff that you don't see that's transparent. And it's all a lot of positions supporting some of the stuff that's done. And then in the case of probation and parole, like they need more officers in that category to deal with the increasing workload. Because, for example, they only see sex offenders about half an hour a month. Like is that acceptable to the public or not? So, coming back to what type of workforce do we want to have inspecting and looking after food and ensuring that it's safe and stuff like that? And when you turn on the tap, the water comes out, you expect it to be safe. So that's what a lot of this is about, and it's about learning the lessons from Walkerton.
Can you describe a few of the proposals that OPSU is putting forward onto the bargaining table. We hear a lot about wages in the mainstream media, not a whole lot about some of the other
the government has been doing they're trying to make the issue it's about the money. Well, it's not about the money. OPSU, our buying power has, we've lost, 12% since 93-94, and originally in their opening position they were trying to regain, get us back to the 93-94 levels, and so they counter-proposed, the last counter-proposal, well, like right now everything's in a media blackout, and the last one we were aware of was they had basically had countered with a, I think, what was it, 5% per year over 3 years, like in each of 3 years, and the government had offered 1.95.
Mm-hmm.
The big issue for a lot of our members is this pension issue. Like our pension fund, since we got joint trusteeship of it, we've had the people that have been able to manage it well, whereas when the government ran it, they give themselves an IOU, and the fund didn't do well. So we've built up a surplus. The government wants to get control of the surplus that's in there. Like, we split the surplus 50-50. Well, the government wants control of our share. And that's a big major issue for a lot of our members that are out on the picket line. Also, they're wanting concessions from us as far as benefits go. And we think OPSU's position is, well, we've got the second largest benefits package in the province. Why not put it out to the industry and tender it out and see if we can't get a better deal? Rather than, I think they were looking for, in the last proposal before they went back to the table, they were looking for about $10 million in cuts to that plan. So I don't know the specifics off the top of my head, but that was kind of the round numbers. So one of the other issues is we talk about is respect for our workers. We have what's called a classified position, which is a regular position with wages, benefits, that type of thing, and then unclassified, where it's strictly just wages and you could be let go with 2 weeks' notice. Well, they're exploiting those types of positions by keeping people in those positions for a long period of time, and we think they should be rolled over after, say, like a one-year period. In the last contract, it was a two-year period, but the employer plays this game of what they do is they change the, for again in our place, the farm income disaster program. It used to be called the whole farm disaster. Then they changed the name of the program, changed the positions, and they call it, essentially they're doing the same work, but they just changed the name of the program and the positions, and the people have to start over again.
Right. So they're declassified, in effect.
Yeah, in a way, they're declassified. They're not, and they don't give them, like, we have a grid system for, with classified positions where you go, like, when you start out at the bottom of the grid and you work your way up every year. Well, the people in unclassified positions, they don't even get merit raises.
So there's been a definite increase in the number of people that have been finding themselves in these unclassified positions.
Actually, it's about 30-some percent, about 33% of the province's public service workforce is unclassified.
Has that percentage increased over the past 6 or 7 years?
Dramatically.
Yeah,
very dramatically. The unclassified position before this particular government took power was meant to be a temporary position to do backfills.
Mm-hmm.
For example, somebody goes on, I don't know, say a maternity leave or a parental leave, they would use a one of those types of positions to backfill for that person until they come back.
Mm-hmm.
But if the work continued on, there were to be a regular classified position. Now they changed the legislation, they changed the rules, and they've introduced a third category, which is called a term classified, which they can hire for somebody up to 3 years and then let them go with 16 weeks notice. They get some benefits, but they have the option of opting out of the pension program. And that leaves the door open to, for example, if I was to move on to another position, maybe my position would be abolished and they'd replace it with a term classified. So it would eventually, over time, erode away our classified service,
mm-hmm.
and that will affect the pension program too. You won't have, as people go out on pension, you won't have people falling in behind that are making contributions to the plans. So, anyways, I've kind of rambled here. I should let you ask some more questions.
No, that's what this is about, is getting at what you're thinking about this. I'm interested in some of the other issues that I noted were being put on the table by the union in terms of protection for whistleblowers. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, currently, take for example, if I can talk to you now as a member of OPSU, and I was previously in on assignment with OPSU. Well, I could talk about what was happening, and but once I go back to my position, my home position, I wouldn't be able to talk to you any longer, because then I don't have protection under. If I saw something that was glaringly wrong, mm-hmm. I couldn't tell the public about it, because they would come after me for a breach of confidentiality. Right. And by having whistleblower protection on there, members would be able to alert the public to potential problems, whereas the employer or the government wants to cover that up. They don't want that type of information out there. So we're trying to protect the public and do what's the best in the public's interest. So by having whistle protection, actually they got a, when with the, in the case of the Walkerton issues up there, they actually got temporary whistle blowing protection so that the people could speak freely at the inquiry or whatever. Normally, under normal circumstances, as an employee or of the Crown, you're not allowed to talk about issues unless you're designated to talk about them.
Right.
And you have to kind of toe the company line, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be the media representative or whoever that would be the mouthpiece for the organization. And you've kind of spoken to this, and I'm kind of interested in your opinion on this. Have we developed a twisted view of what the public service is about by accepting things like this, where, things aren't as transparent as they should be, or this sort of thing? Has there been an erosion of our concept of the public sector, do you think?
Well, yes. I think, if I understand the context of your question, I think there has been an erosion. In the case of with our programs, they say food safety is top number one, but yet they've never addressed the issue of having a type of workforce that does the inspection. And this kind of came to light when you look at what happened back on September the 11th with the type of force they had in place to do the security. It all of a sudden became an issue, and in the case of the critic for Steve Peters, who is the liberal in food, has been at the minister about the type of boat meat inspection and about things that are in food safety. So there's some things there that that just maybe need to be tweaked a little bit and maybe need some changes. But the current government thinks everything is okay. But again, we kind of raise these issues and say, look, we think things need to be fixed. Especially when you have a high turnover with your inspection staff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just kind of an example of something that needs to be looked at.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, in terms of the context of Guelph, how are you seeing the strike impacting workers so far? We're just a couple of weeks into the strike. How are workers faring so far?
Well, the anybody we talk to, the spirits are really high on the picket line. They know why we're out there. We had a really high vote for the turn with the offer. 88% turned it down at the record. We also had a high percentage of our members come out and turned it down. So they're resolved in what they are trying to achieve.
I'm also aware that there was a solidarity, a show of solidarity yesterday at noon at One Stone Road. Was there good turnout, and are you feeling strong support from other groups and workers?
Yes, we're feeling lots of solidarity right from day one. Some of the unions on campus there, CUPE and the Students Association and the Labor Council, has been really great at showing support. The weather yesterday wasn't maybe the best. The teachers were out there to show solidarity, and just like to acknowledge those people, those unions that are on campus that have made financial contributions to our local and to other locals in Guelph. So we appreciate that very much, and all their efforts. So, and we know they're there. All we have to do is make a call if need be. So.
That's great. And I guess just finally, now that the OPSU and the government are back at negotiations, back at the table, how are you feeling? Do you feel like headway will be made in those negotiations, or is it still sort of a tough road ahead with this?
I'm cautiously optimistic that something will be resolved.
Great. And is there anything else that I've missed that you'd like to mention right now?
No, I think I've kind of rambled on.
Great. Well,
I'm sure there's other issues and other departments of the government that need attention too. So, but I think I've pretty well covered most of what comes to top of mind for myself.
Great. Well, I appreciate you talking to me today.
Okay.
And thank you. Well, thanks very much.
Okay. No problem.